Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I talked with violinist Joshua Bell about his CD called For the Love of Brahms. It includes Brahms' 1854 piano trio, written when he was just 20 years old. He'd recently become close friends with violinist Josef Joachim and Robert and Clara Schumann. It also includes Brahms' double concerto, written in 1887, after he'd had a rift in his friendship with Joachim. Between these two Brahms works is the slow movement from Schumann's violin concerto. I first asked Bell about the interesting combination of pieces and the overall theme of the album. What drew you to the idea of an album called For the Love of Brahms, which actually could be called For the Love of Brahms and His Friends?
Well, For the Love of Brahms, I guess, sort of encompasses all the love between him, his friends, and between us, the players, and Brahms, the sort of general feeling of love surrounding his music and us who perform his amazing music. So maybe a little corny title, but the album was a sort of a labor of love because these are pieces I've loved and played for very long time, particularly the Brahms double, which is was sort of the start of the idea of this album, was Stephen Isserles and I wanting to finally record it. We've been playing it for almost three decades since we met when I was a teenager. When we first met, he's a little older than I am, but we've been playing it a lot over the years, and it's an incredible piece. And we finally found the right time and occasion with a great orchestra that's the Academy of St. Armand in the Fields, for whom I'm the music director now. So it kind of worked out that we'd finally got the right occasion to record it. And then after we did that, we thought, how do we fill out the album with a kind of a theme? And the Brahms double is really about love and friendship. You know, Joachim, the great violinist of the day and Brahms' friend, the two of them, Brahms and Joachim, sort of had a falling out later in life over something sort of what we now look at as being sort of petty, perhaps some personal issue, non-musical. And Brahms wrote this piece as a peace offering and trying to mend this incredibly fruitful friendship that it had been. And it's an amazing piece. No, there's nothing like it for violin and cello and orchestra like this. It stands sort of alone as this iconic piece.
Are there any particular parts of it that you could describe as illustrating the emotional story behind it?
Well, there are many. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth, a lot of, you know, the two instruments finishing each other's sentences, but also sometimes sort of commenting and arguing back and forth. In the slow movement, one example that it's very easy to see is the middle section. There's a middle section of the slow movement where the violin is sort of offering this sort of gesture. You can hear this sort of offering a gesture of affection, a sort of questioning, though, and then the cello comes in, interjects with this kind of but no, and then the violin tries again, and then he says, the cello comes in, but what you did this, you can imagine if there were words, like, and then finally the third time it kind of says, the cello kind of says, okay, you know, let's, and he softens his stance on whatever they're arguing. Of course, it's all abstract, but so you feel these moments in the piece and sense it, certainly at the end, by the time you get to the end of the piece, of just total resolution and triumph, and just gives me goosebumps just even right now thinking about the piece and the way it, after 40 minutes or however long it is, you feel like you've been through this incredible journey.
How important is it to you to probe the stories behind the music when you play something like this?
Well, it's important, but not, I mean, for me, it's all in the music. But it certainly helps. It certainly confirms a lot of what you when you play the music, a lot of it you just feel is there. You kind of feel like you understand it on its own terms. But when you hear these stories, often it's like, ah, that makes sense. That's why that's there. And sometimes it even leads you to think, oh, this must be because of that, and maybe perhaps I should do it more this way. And so it does help. It always helps. Stephen Isserles has always been one more probing of those things than I, like, you know, and I've always appreciated that. You know, he's very much interested in the historical side and knowing every little detail about what was happening at the time and what the motives were. And so I think it is important.
It's interesting that you've been playing it with him, too, because I would imagine if you play something for a long time with the same person that your interpretation evolves.
Definitely. I mean, it evolves. Anytime you play a piece over and over again over the years, it evolves. Playing it with someone, you evolve together. You know, each time we reapproach it, we have new arguments and new thoughts and new things we have to work out. And eventually, after doing that, it just starts to become something organic and settles into something that feels right. But when we do it, and if we do it again in a few years, it may be, again, we may think of it in different ways. And that's the beautiful thing about, you know, great music, classical music.
Right. Well, the other pieces on this album have equally compelling stories behind them, and they're really interesting. The movement from the Schumann Violin Concerto is really fascinating, and it's beautiful. Is it right that this is the first recording of it?
Well, in this particular form, you see, the Schumann Violin Concerto has been recorded. I've recorded the whole piece many, many years ago with Cleveland Orchestra and Dohnányi. I love the concerto. It's hardly ever played, which is a shame. Although even those who diss the piece, because which makes me angry because it's such an incredible piece, because it has some imperfections and is awkwardly written for the instrument, etc. Nobody ever argues that the slow movement is not one of the most beautiful things ever written. And some people say, well, if you could just play the slow movement on its own, I would listen to it all the time. But you can't, basically, because of the way it morphs into the last movement, and it doesn't work as a standalone piece. At least that's what I thought, until Stephen Isserlis told me, you know, I just discovered this somewhere in some library, a sketching of the slow movement of Schumann with a coda written by Benjamin Britten, of all people, that he had put together for just one occasion, for a memorial for a friend. I guess Britten loved this piece as well. And he had sort of added this coda so it could be played on its own. But no one's ever performed it, or it hasn't been published in that way. So Stephen found this, and I took a look at it, and I thought this would be great for the album because, first of all, it starts with a wonderful cello solo. So I had Stephen there that could play the cello interjections in the piece, which are so special. And it ties in with the whole theme of Joachim and Brahms. And Brahms's love for Clara Schumann, Robert Schumann's wife, was a sort of unrequited love, of course, as we all know, most of us know this story. And the early trio, which we have on the album, was written right around the time that he sort of met the Schumanns and was clearly influenced by his love for Clara.
Speaking of the slow movement, before we leave that, I read, I think, in some of the materials that it was perhaps one of your favorite slow movements. Mm-hmm. Why do you say that?
Well, it's heartbreaking. I mean, it's just heavenly, and it plunges the depths of emotion, and it's just supremely beautiful. I don't know what else to say about it. I always love Schumann. I love really all of his music. I think he's the most romantic of composers, in a way, the quintessential romantic composer. He had a way of just getting at the depths of those emotions, particularly love and beauty. He must have been an incredible person. Someone really would have been so neat to be around all of that quartet of characters, Clara and him and Brahms and Joachim. What an amazing dinner party that would have been.
Definitely. Well, and the last piece on the CD, the piano trio, it is interesting how the two Brahms works kind of bookend the Schumann, and one is a very early work and one is a very late work. The piano trio, as you mentioned, was written right after Brahms had met everyone in this mm-hmm. quartet. I understand that some of the themes are quotations from songs.
I believe so, yeah. This is a common occurrence in a lot of composers of that time, with Schumann and Schubert and Brahms. But he was 20 or 21 years old when he wrote it, and became, you know, one of his well-known pieces, the Opus 8 Trio. But what we know as the Opus 8 Trio generally is his revised version, which he revised greatly, later on in his life. And it's more, in fact, in some ways, it's more reminiscent of the later Brahms, that version. This early version, which I only discovered seven or eight years ago, when Stephen Isserlis suggested that we read it. It does exist as published, and Brahms, in fact, sort of allowed for its existence instead of destroying it. So coexist with the later version. But when you hear it, and especially if you know the later version, it starts out okay. You think, okay, this is the Opus 8 Trio, and then it suddenly starts to take some turns shocking turns into themes that are not existent at all in the revised version. And it's fascinating to hear it, especially if you know the other version. And I started to fall in love with this. I knew the other one first, but I started to fall in love with this version. It's more really hard on sleeve, very impulsive and raw in a lot of ways. And, you know, some things are maybe not quite as perfect, but it really gives you a glimpse into a sense of the young Brahms, which I think is really special.
Let me quickly jump to a different subject. You've had such interesting experiences in everything you've done, not just in formal settings, but in playing music on the subway. And what do you look forward to in the future, and what does this music mean to you?
Well, I mean, I love being a musician. I have the best job in the world. And it all started, by the way, in Philadelphia. My debut was at the Academy of Music with
Ricardo Muti.
Yeah. And I love coming with the orchestra. And now you have this amazing music director, Yannick. It's really one of my favorite anywhere. So very happy for the orchestra. They're sounding great. We just played together in Saratoga. They're just so good, of course. But anyway, yeah, my career is now kind of so eclectic. I mean, I do a lot of what I've been doing my whole life, playing concertos with orchestras as a guest and recitals and chamber music, but also throwing in there here and there little fun things whenever I can, either a movie soundtrack or appearance on Mozart in the Jungle or, you know, or going on a talk show. You know, I enjoy that aspect. It is actually a mission of mine to try to involve kids and hopefully expand the audience of classical music without degrading it in any way or watering it down. It doesn't need that. You know, I think we just need lots of ways to reach people with classical music. And, I do my best to do what I can.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for talking, and congratulations on the new CD.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks very much.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.